Today is creating connection and togetherness. That's the subtitle, but the main title is cultivating a sense of belonging. And we've been just starting to touch on it, but I'm hoping Wadi will join. Veronica will share with us
You can say, Wadi, it's fine.
A habit. I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine.
How to feel a sense of belonging without changing who you are. Is it possible that we can be part of a we without losing the me? And how do you respond when you find that you don't have that sense of belonging, that you feel like an outsider? So how do you build a sense of connection and togetherness? Our speaker tonight is Veronica, and you've heard me calling her Wadi, Veronica McHugh. She's joining us from Miami. For over 40 years, Veronica has been studying and teaching meditation, originally from Ireland. I think everybody could guess that from the accent.
Still there.
It's still there, but is currently based in Miami. She is the director of the Brahmakumaris in Florida. And if you haven't picked up on it already, you will very shortly. Her warmth and friendliness brings an instant sense of belonging. So I'm looking forward to hearing her insights. There is one other thing. Wadi's going to share with us for 14 minutes. And then after that, she'll do a short meditation. And then she'll be taking your questions. So if you could send in your questions via the question and answer link, that would be most helpful. And I will put those questions to our speaker tonight. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Aarti. When I see Aarti, I think she's still only 25, but I've known her for 45 years. And again, always enjoy the conversations and would have been quite happy for her to have continued in that vein. So belonging, I instantly connect the word belonging with longing, because I wonder when we're born and assuming some type of normalcy with a parent or parents, and they bring you into the fold, so to speak, and they tell you these are your relatives, these are your ancestors, this is your history, this is your religion. And so you grow up in that vibration, if you like. But you don't consciously have yet that sense of belonging, even though it is there, and you're sheltered by it, and you're protected maybe from other things because of it. And so it would be hoped that there is such a shelter of belonging that we were born into, that it allowed us or gave us permission then to explore our longing. And maybe for a lot of you like me, there came a time when you knew you had to leave that. And I remember when I was traveling through the United States when I was in my early 20s, footloose and fancy free, as Aarti said. And at one point in the journey, my friend and I arrived at my aunt's home, and my aunt and uncle from Ireland. And I would have been the first relative that they would ever have had come visit them since they had moved to the United States probably in the 1950s. And so we were together over the period of Christmas. And of course, we had a lot of Irish records, and there was Killy dancing and all of this sort of stuff. And I remember thinking at the time, and probably writing in the diary, that although a deep appreciation for the foundation of the culture that I was born into and all that that entailed, but that of itself and by itself, it would never be enough to sustain me or define me, that I knew that that I was more than that. That was only an aspect of me. And so ideally, and in some ways, what life has shown me, it's not about belonging and just sitting there. That belonging doesn't mean being static or stasis. But ideally, if I feel or I know that I belong in my own life and that I belong to my own self, then no matter who it is that I'm with or where it is that I'm at, then I don't ever lose that sense, and that I don't compromise my values depending on what situation I'm in or what person I'm with or anything else. And so this is ideally. And yet we have to traverse not just ideal situations. It's not that everything is flowers and rainbows, that there's also there's the periods of darkness, there's the period of hurt, etc. And so when it comes to this thing, you know, thinking about, say, for instance, a child and the child's heart, that as soon as it feels that it's excluded, the hurt is very, very traumatic and very deep. And I remember reading about a lady who she had had gotten a diagnosis, and it was going to require surgery. And she asked if she could be given some time to try some alternative treatments. And so the doctors conceded and agreed. And I've forgotten where the tumor was. But anyway, she went through this exploration in terms of her body and her history. And what she discovered was that at 8 years of age, she and I believe two friends, or a sister and another friend, they were together on the beach, three little girls playing together, a nice little group. But then the other two kids ran off deliberately and left her behind. And so that small incident, you know, ultimately resulted, that kind of rejection ultimately resulted in a medical situation that would require surgery. And so in the scheme of things, a small event, but the feeling of rejection, of not being accepted, for a little child, for a child's heart, was so profound that this was the result. And so I think in some ways that all of us are longing for something, that and maybe we use the word belonging. I'm looking to feel that I belong. Well, what is it? Am I looking to see if I can measure up to this group's ideas and ideals, and that then I can fit myself into that? Or what is it that I'm really wanting? I feel that there's a little bit of urgency in the heart of each of us, or in the soul of each of us, that there is a destiny for each one of us, and that it has to be completed in a way, that something is urging me on, And that if I allow it and not to be frightened by it and to not get either dissuaded by what is considered popular at the moment or in vogue, that your life belongs to you, and that there is a path, if you like, there is a destiny. And that if you're open to it, just a little bit of trusting, and it will become clear to you. And then it won't be that you're looking for that other person to complete you. Because, you know, when we think of belonging, it doesn't mean that I have to be beholden to someone else. It doesn't mean that someone else has ownership of me. And yet I am so influenced by the way that other people perceive me or think about me or what they will say about me. And then I act out or act up accordingly. And so naturally, at some point, I'm going to have to say that a requirement is meditation, is about discovering the interiority of your own self, and about not allowing the what might appear to be the rejection or the criticism of others, not to use that then to beat up on your own self, and that the meditation will help you to come to this interior part of yourself that in which a confidence develops and in which you can see yourself, and there's no longer the feeling of loneliness, because in a strange kind of a way, and possibly you all know this already, that sometimes it's what's coming out from me that dictates what's coming back to me. And so my lack of confidence in my own self as I compare myself with others or hold myself to some other standard, it's almost like in a subtle way, you're giving others permission to treat you in the same way. And so this thing of that, you know, I'm with myself 24 hours a day, and I need to be able to listen and trust my inner self. And I remember a few years ago, I was speaking to someone who was telling me their story. And it was a young man, and his parents asked him if he would go and help a new branch or a new wing of this organization had been established in Mount Abu. And they asked him if he would go and help. He didn't have any particular interest in doing that. And yet, to please his parents, he went anyway. And he told me that as soon as he got there, that he had this feeling of belonging, of having come home. Now, this campus had not been around for very long, so there's no question of it having been a past birth experience or earlier in this lifetime. It was very new. And so what I came to realize is that when we have that feeling of I've come home, it's not that that's like the end of your journey, but maybe that's the place from where your destiny can be launched. And then that you see something begin to unfold inside your own self. And so never give up the seeking or the looking, or as was suggested by today's topic, you know, cultivating this sense of belonging. You remember the Desiderata? I'm a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. I have a right to be here. And whether or not it's clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. And so belonging at this time, you could almost say the universe has embraced us. The universe is subtly telling us not only that we have a right to be here at the present time, but there is a need for us to be here at the present time, that we have something to provide, something to contribute to the unfolding of the destiny of the drama, of the story, if you like. And so this, I think sometimes when people are talking about belonging, that this is, it's not just about being sheltered from the loneliness of life, but at some level, it's wanting to know their own value. At first, they might want their value to be perceived by others. They want to be seen by others. They want to be heard by others. They want to be acknowledged or valued by others. But in reality, I have to start to do those things for my own self. And this is where the inner journey is, you know, absolutely vital and necessary. And that I come to discover that I do have capabilities or capacity even values as yet maybe unexpressed, but that as I acknowledge them and claim them, if you like, situations will open up and offer me the possibility of using those in a worthwhile way. And then, even though I no longer need the feedback from others as desperately as I might have done before, it will automatically come. But you will no longer be, as I say, dependent upon it, that you have started to carve your own path in which the value for your own self in terms of your individuality on the one hand, and on the other hand, your capacity to cooperate and to be, you know, part of something that's bigger than your own self. And yes, this thing of even though we're connected with people all over the world, but not necessarily in an intimate kind of a way. And this is sometimes the feeling of what is lacking. And I was remembering another scenario. Many years ago, I was already living in Miami. And there was a young cousin who was undergoing surgery in San Francisco. And so I went over to San Francisco. And I was staying at the meditation center. Many of the people there were not very well known to me. I certainly didn't have any sense of intimacy with them. And on the other hand, there was my sister and my cousin, some other old intimate relationships from, you know, my teenage years and earlier. And then my very dear friend, with whom I had been a traveler, the first person, she was from Yorkshire, and with whom I had gone through Europe and into Israel. She was married and living in San Francisco as well. Her husband, we met him on the road when we were traveling. That was how she came to know him. And so it was like, here were three areas of my life. And so there was the childhood, there was the sort of adult period, or when I was still young and adventurous. And then the organization, or the group, if you like, that I had connected with, and through which I, you know, gave credit for my growing spiritually. Now, even though all three of them, they didn't necessarily intersect with each other, but yet there was a sameness in terms of values and a code of more than ethics, but a deep code that included things like, you know, honesty and justice and freedom and inclusivity and things like that. All of these three aspects subscribe to these ideals. And yet, even though there might have been less intimacy with the people in the meditation world, yet that was the one that I was going to align myself with for the next part of my journey. Doesn't mean that I abandoned either of the other two, although they were less a fixture in my life. And so this thing of belonging, it's either to do with, or maybe it's to do with all three. There's people, it could be place, and history, or in other words, time. And so at different times in my life, then belonging and the feeling of belonging and the happiness of belonging, without ever using the word, would be traded in. It was part of the journey. It was never the end of the journey. And so even though, as I said, there might have been less intimacy with the people that were in my spiritual life at that time, yet that was where I knew I had to be. So belonging isn't just the safety of being acknowledged, of being included, of, you know, of understanding the code, but it is about getting back to the ultimate belonging. And I often quote T.S. Eliot and that idea of that all of our, I've forgotten the exploration, I believe was the word he used, that all of our exploration will lead us back to that place from which we started. And it will be as if we are knowing that place for the first time. And so, in other words, resident in my soul or my heart, whatever name you want to give to that part of you, which is eternal and is not confined by either time or space, that it knows better. And it's that. It's my origins, not that are pulling me backwards, but paradoxically that are pushing me forwards to that ultimate place of, as was mentioned, of rest and comfort. And so I would say one of the things is choose well with whom you associate. And that there will be those who will reflect back to you, not your yearning just, but rather that have moved maybe a little bit further along, and that they're not going to insist that you follow them, but that they'll make something clear for you. And so I think one of the things is just that it's so important to be able to trust in your own destiny, in your own ultimate achievement, and that it's about becoming comfortable, really, really comfortable with your own self. I sometimes say, you know, the people who are not, we know everything is transient. And it's almost like in the belonging, you have to acknowledge that there can also be a separation or distance, because even that has to be included in the whole thing. And so the idea of learning how to be with people and learning how to be without them as well. And so that when time demands that you're in company, time demands your skills or your values or your wisdom, that it's available. And when time suggests you need to turn inwards, that there is no one next to you on the couch or sitting opposite you, that you can be equally at home in your own self. So these are just some of the little things that I was thinking about, and not to limit yourself, and not to you know, because there's such potential and possibility. And so with COVID, then maybe either one of two things have happened. And I know that's making it very small, but either I've gone more, not even a question of into my own self in a good way, but where I've, you know, what was the norm before? And we're all bothered by when that changed, and it was dictated that we shouldn't socialize, we had to be in lockdown, and we could no longer do this, that, and the other. And then when lockdown was over, if it is, then people had become, that was the norm for people. And there was a little bit of fear in venturing forth again. In other words, that their comfort and their belonging was you know, only in the context of the room or the house that they were living in. And what it was kind of mistaking safety, feeling safe for belonging. And so to sometimes see where we can deceive ourselves, and that, you know, there's always opportunities, there's always the invitation from the universe to grow and to expand, and never to limit yourself and think you've arrived. You're always arriving. And it's one of the reasons I like this idea of the traveler. You know, the traveler never has a home, or like the birds, it never has a home, but it's always at home, wherever it is. And so that life should be still, even if you're elderly, but it should have the sense of adventure to it, and that that you are open enough and flexible enough to be spontaneous like the child, and to respond in a new way. And so that always this thing of growth, of wanting to see things even in a different way, that you never allow yourself the safety of just being atrophied by whatever your current experience is. And so to be like the child in that sense, and you know how you meet the world is going to be how the world meets you. And even though you don't have, you know, even though you might have good friendships, and for me, friendships are a very special thing. And it's part of that thing of, but you don't belong to each other. I think friendship allows you that you can belong with each other, but you don't belong to each other. And that that kind of intimacy that will allow you to uncover maybe some of the sore spots within your own self that you have either kept hidden from yourself or that you concealed from others. And so there's an energy at the present time, you know, the pessimist can look and what is it they say, you know, that the, you know, the pessimist thinks, oh, you know, like, oh, there's a very strong wind, what am I going to do? And, you know, the optimist thinks, oh, well, you know, it'll change, it'll get better. But then the leader, they're the ones that'll say, no, let me adjust the sails, you know. And so that there's an energy or there's a wind at the moment, I think. And that depending on how you see it, that it can move the boat of your life forward to a new horizon. Or again, you just feel battered and abused and not at all comfortable with it. And I cannot say, once again, I can only share from my own experience. I can only guess. I can only guess at what it must be like to experience or to have no sense of belonging in your own body. You know, that your body feels alien to you. And that, you know, we get to maybe observe it, see how other people deal with it, or that you feel alien in your own family. But again, don't keep compromising yourself to try to please others and allow them to dictate, you know, what your value is. It's like sometimes time, circumstances suggest you need to, you know, move away. You need to move away. That idea of again, to understand this, as someone said, that is it time? How do you know that it's time to move away? You will get many signs and signals, but sometimes you do have to check. And it means maybe knocking on the door. And as someone has suggested, that, you know, if the answer you get that, yes, it's time to go, that it's time to put a full stop here, don't break your head trying to make it into a comma. Because I have seen that too, you know, where you keep going back to be punished some more, and to feel more hurt and to feel more pain, you know, when everything else is suggesting lift anchor and move on. And it may not be as easy as it sounds, but it is simply, you know, embracing your own self and coming into the security of you being the one who defines you. And this is where spiritual life really, really helps, because it is in the interior space where you will get an image of yourself, or a way of seeing yourself that is not connected with the opinion of human beings, or that defines you because of an incident or an accident or something that happened in your life, that it will free you for moments from all that has happened before, and by which you defined yourself or punished yourself, and will allow a clarity to come that you are more than the sum total of your experiences or of people's opinions about you, and that a confidence then arising in that idea that, you know, that you do have a fixed orbit, if you like, that there is a light, there is something that is aware of you, that knows intimately your striving and your yearning, and knows the place from which it has come, that it's not from a reaction to the loneliness or the not being seen or valued, but that it comes rather from a much, much deeper level. And it is that level that has known oneself in terms of eternity, has known oneself in terms of wholeness, of completion, of authenticity, and of clarity. And for those moments, just bathing in that reflected light allows me to come out, because belonging also means that the creativity that is yearning to be expressed can also be released, that my heart is intimately involved, and that there is satisfaction, that there is a sense of well-being and a trust that, yes, like as we mentioned earlier, that type of sensor, that when it's dark, and then when you step into that dark space, the light comes on. And so all it needs is a little bit of, I guess, courage and trust that you have everything that is required for the rest of the journey. And so that it's not about belonging to an individual or just a family dynamic, but that you belong to something much, much, much larger. And that will then express itself in every facet of your life, whether you're bringing up your children or you're going to school or you're painting pictures, whatever it is that you're doing, that it will automatically express itself. And you know, your comfort with your own self, however I am, whatever I am, I'm good enough at this moment. It's not the end of me, but at this moment, however I am, whatever I am, I'm good enough. And that with your comfort in your own self, automatically, without any effort on your part, you will help others to feel comfortable in their own selves too, with themselves as well. So will we leave it there for the time being and take a few minutes in meditation? Let's just go to that place that is the ultimate home, if you like, for all of us, and wherein, even though I'm still uniquely me, there is no feeling of being different from anyone else. no feeling of higher, lower, better, more clever, that there is finally, it's egalitarian, it's equality. There is no possibility of people being at the edges of not being included, because I suppose what we all want in terms of the belonging, even though we can itemize, but it comes back. It always comes back to love. Always comes back to love. And so with this thought of that at the heart of me, is love. And the important thing is to be able to express that love. And so can I sit with just this thought, creation made me room. And creation perhaps wants to see itself reflected in me. I am a part of the whole. I have gifts to offer. Even as like the tree, my growth continues. And at the very heart of me the seed of me is love. And in many ways like branches on the tree, I extend that love. And that others may be nourished by the fruit birds find refuge and others some shelter. This is my contract I love. And as if all those branches are drawn back, the sap from them into the sea. I am never diminished. In the giving, I belong. In the heart of me, Shanti.
Thank you. That was really beautiful. A few questions have come in already, if I may bounce them on you. So the first one is, what do you suggest for people like me who find it difficult to connect with other people, maybe because of being self-conscious or shy or self-critical? It often feels like my own thoughts of doubt, fear, and criticism build a wall between me and others. And I find it difficult to be present.
Yeah. And so it's like you're inhabiting your own life in a particular kind of a way. And the furniture in your house is old and tattered and torn and no longer suits you. If you're asking the question, then it almost suggests that you're ready to change the furniture, to change the setup inside your own self, and to have that little bit of courage to move out into the open and allow yourself to be seen. Because I really feel that humanity as a whole is very kind and forgiving and accepting and is full of qualities if you give them half a chance. And so sometimes the fear of rejection, and again, it's self-fulfilling. And it's not that they're rejecting you, but it's because you're rejecting yourself, you know. And then you'll say, well, you see, I told you if I did this, this is what would happen. But no, you do, I do believe that, yes, at some level, you do train others how to be with you. And I don't mean train them like a dog, but that, you know, what you give off and what you emote, that they will respond to that. But very often we end up like accusing them or blaming them when in truth, we have done it, you know. And so what will persuade you to go out there? And my sense that perhaps that for someone, okay, for one person, making friends or talking to people is very easy. There's no difficulty in it. But for someone else, that maybe a little more difficult, but I suspect that you have some other quality that makes up for that one. And I wouldn't be surprised if you told me that you like to write, or you're artistic, or that you're creative in another kind of a way. You know, I personally, I don't feel I'm very creative at all. And so the being easy with people is my creativity, if you like. And so I suspect that you have something else. And so are you able to offer that? It's just a thought. Feel free to, if you want to, share further.
Wow.
And Artie, please jump in if you have something to add. Help me here.
I don't think I need the help, but if anything comes to mind, I will. That was very interesting, that just because I'm not as great at communicating face-to-face, it doesn't mean I'm unable to communicate in another creative manner. That's really
right.
Interesting. Wow. Here's the next question. What if most of my life I've feel like being sidelined by my peers, then my colleagues at work, even at the gym? I never manage to find friends. It's painful to be alone most of the time.
Oh, that's a hard one. You know, I'm a little baffled because, you know, sometimes you have to see it in the opposite way. It's not that you're not right for them, but they're not right for you. Do you understand? And so I'm not sure that there's, I think the easiest way in terms of interacting with people is just to be yourself. And I suspect sometimes when there is a deep neediness in someone, that can act like a barrier. You know, that people may feel your neediness and that they don't feel that they have the wherewithal to provide you with as much as what you seem to want from them. And so rather than wanting something from the other people, can you be the one who maybe gives? And so whether it's the smile or the good morning or the engagement, just for the sake of it and not with any ulterior motive. And, you know, it's what the ancients have always said, whatever it is you want, give it. And so, you know, you, like all of us, we have some work to do in that we need to be attuned to our beauty and our gifts. And that gives us the strength to uncover some of our more delicate or detrimental aspects and to be able to put them in context and deal with them, and not to see them as so huge or so insurmountable, but that they're really small things, you know. And so is it possible to kind of, and this is where meditation helps to clean the slate. But if every time you enter into a relationship, you have that list of all the people who've ignored you or sidelined you or whatever else they've done or didn't do in relation to you, if all of that is in your consciousness, that will be the projection, you know. And so it's like with the, almost like, you know, put on a new hat and see yourself in a different way. And then others can't do, even if they're not all rushing out to embrace you, but they're not ignoring you either, you know. So that would be the thought.
So what do you think, or what method would you use to start seeing yourself differently?
Well, one of the things I think is sometimes, you know, that you are complicit in other people's expectations of you and the images that they have of you. And so check and see who's in your head and to whom do you feel you're beholden. It could be your boss. It could be a parent or a partner or whoever, but that they occupy such a big seat in your head, and that everything that you think, do, and say, you kind of go back to them in your head. What will so-and-so say about this? What will so-and-so think about this? What will they, you know, advise? So you're never your own person, that you really are, in a subtle kind of a way, you've given ownership of yourself to someone else. So not ownership in the sense of being a slave, but at some level that you have surrendered your own dignity and your own self-worth to the opinion of somebody else. And so check your head and see, you know, who it is. It's just like, say, for instance, there's a story that I always liked a lot from the Hindu epics, and that of when this person was in grave danger. She called out to everyone, including, she had five husbands, and she called out to each one of them, and she called her brothers and she called her uncles and everybody else to get her out of this dilemma. And then finally, when the divine came into the picture, and the divine questioned her, or rather she questioned the divine, "Why didn't you come and help me sooner?" And the divine responded, "Well, I was the last one you came to. You asked everybody else first." And so check and see who's in your head and whose opinion it is that you value. And it may not be a bad thing, but sometimes, especially if you see them as always critiquing you or criticizing you, you need to give them an eviction notice. You know, tell them to move out and allow that divine inhabitant to enter your space, you know. Just a thought.
Oh, that's really nice. Who have I rented my head space and heart space out to?
Really? I remember some... Sorry, go ahead, Artie.
Do I need to evict somebody out of there?
Yes.
So I'm not really rejecting them. I'm just inviting them to live in another space. Is that what you...
Thank you. Very nice. Very nice. I remember somebody saying once, don't allow so-and-so into your head because they require a very big seat.
You spoke in your talk about rejection and how rejection... when felt deeply, can harm the health of an individual. Mm. How do you deal with rejection? How do you get over it?
Well, it means that you're believing the reason that you've been rejected or whatever. Now there are different kinds of rejections, I suppose, like and so for a child it's one thing, and we all know that thing of where, you know, they're picking a team or whatever and you're the last one to be picked, or you know, or you don't get picked at all. And so that's a form of rejection. And so the young, gentle, innocent heart of the child is on the one hand, but if the child has, you know, wise parents, they will be able to use it as a teaching moment, right? And that all of these things have to happen, I suppose. And again, like with that story that I told, that person had carried that rejection from she was 8 years old, even though she had gone through life and was mature and successful and an author of books and so on, and yet had carried that with her. And then you have the thing of, like, what would be seen perhaps as a rejection. You've given your heart to someone, you know, you've given your life to someone, you've agreed to partner with them or be married to them or whatever else. And I suppose in that kind of an intimate setting, it's like, I always feel it's like two people saying to each other, I will make you my number one if you make me your number one, because the world doesn't feel like a safe place. And so this is our kind of agreement or our contract. You'll be my number one if I'm your number one. And then at some point, do I take that as a rejection? No, this is part of what we were talking about earlier, that belonging is in the moment. It may have a limitation of time, that I belong to this group now, I belong to that family then, I belong in this country at another time. And so that you take everything that you have learned from each belonging that you were a part of, but that no belonging is the end of the journey. And so what seems like a rejection at another point in time, you will know it was the best thing that ever happened to you. Because not only did you accommodate it, even though there were tears shed and heartache and sorrow, but you came through it. But it was because the universe wanted to show you that it really had something better for you, or somewhere else that it needed your participation or your finger or your qualities or your wisdom. And so in that way, I would see it as not in and of itself, although at the moment it might hurt like heck, but later on, trusting your journey, trusting that whoever is supposed to be on your path and that you're supposed to be involved with will show up. And once again, it depends on, you know, what title do you accord that person? You know, if you're rejected, you know, you're in the store or the shop and the shopkeeper serves everybody else before you, even though you came in first, do you feel rejected? I don't think so. And so it depends. So you, to the extent that you've given them that authority over you, you know, or ownership over you, or that they have some say in your life, to that extent, you'll feel rejected. You're not going to feel rejected by a stranger for the most part, right? But it will be that you have accorded them some authority in your life, and time showing it's time to remove that, you know? What do you think, Artie?
I think it's really true. I look back and often think, if I hadn't felt so clearly that my journey was something else, that there was something else, I think I would have felt a lot of rejection. Instead, I thought that, okay, well, my path is different, and I've got to live it, or because I can't live another life.
Yes, yes.
And I certainly can't live somebody else's life.
Absolutely. And so that, just holding that that idea or ideal for yourself that you have to play your part and play it the best way you know how, and that, and where you have a generosity of spirit and the nature to forgive and forget, then other things will come to you much more quickly, in a sense. In other words, you won't have to sit with your pain for very long, but there'll be something that will comfort, that will assuage whatever bitterness there might have been, and that clarity about, you know, it's part of this thing of, what do I have control over? Who do I have control over? Is there an answer to that question? And yet it's like we want to, the paradox of desirous of change and yet wanting things to be fixed and steady and static and unchanging. And that's not life. That's not life. And so that thing of being, you know, like the river, being fluid and moving and a willingness to adjust. I'm not saying that I can always instantly adjust, but at least there's a willingness, there's a knowing that in order to keep things moving, I have to adjust.
And can I ask, what's the connection for you between oversensitivity, I guess that's what I would call it, and rejection? Do they, you know, how do they gel?
Of course. And so which one begets which, you know? And it's almost like, because when there's oversensitivity, even when they're, you know, I remember a scene once where, without going into the detail of it, which was funny in itself, but something had happened. And I guess somebody had said something or another, and then they came to apologize to me, but I didn't even know I'd been insulted. They were coming to apologize for insulting me, and I had no sense that he had insulted me. And so that's the thing, and whether that's like being thick-skinned or not, I don't know. But again, it's like I can't keep allowing everybody else to tell me who I am and who I'm not, you know. And so for sure, where there's an oversensitivity, then rejection is an absolute. Because the oversensitivity, as you know, responding to that inquiry earlier, the oversensitivity is going to make people behave in a certain kind of a way with me, you know? And so it's not that they're trying to maybe accommodate my sensitivity. So you have to choose, do I want them to accommodate my feelings in this particular department, or that I'm very sensitive about these things? Do I want them to accommodate that at any cost, or do I want honesty? You know? And so if I want honesty, then sometimes it means allowing myself to be vulnerable enough to hear what others have to say, or for them to feed back in an honest way that might be helpful to me. But if I just demand, so you see, it's a controlling thing, the sensitivity, the oversensitivity, can be a very controlling thing as well. I'm trying to remember what somebody once said in relation to somebody's sensitivity, that it's like, you know, it becomes a manipulation that everybody's trying to avoid, like an outburst or tears or whatever from that person. it's like they become like, what's worse than a dictator? There's another word I can't remember now, but meaning that they kind of become a dictator without dictating. And so you see how it's a manipulative kind of a thing?
Wow. Yeah, I'd never thought of that. But yes, absolutely. So we're actually, not only are we keeping people at arm's length, not only are we holding on to pain, but we're also manipulating other people. And no wonder there isn't that sense of closeness or intimacy.
Absolutely. There can't be honesty. When it comes to closeness and belonging, honesty is a key ingredient. You know, that because you're not allowing the other person to be themselves either.
I think we might come back to this, but in the meantime, the next question. I'm 86 and have lost my wife a year ago to COVID. And definitely miss her. I don't see that many people. We used to. He and his wife used to travel and look forward to holidays. What one thing can I do or think that could cultivate a greater sense of belonging than just my cat and part of my family that I see once a week and I love, but how do I expand, I guess, is the question.
What was that last
piece? I guess the question is, how do I expand my circle when I'm not sure how to do it as an individual because I've always been a partner?
Isn't that interesting? My sense is I'd love to meet you because you have all the requirements. I feel that, you know, with your partner, you evidently acted as a unit. And where I would sometimes say that in the olden days, that partnering often meant that one person took responsibility for a particular area, and often with the socializing and the sending thank you cards and so on and so forth, that was the wife's domain, whereas hubby dealt with the economics and paying the bills and everything. And so it worked very fluidly. But then if the husband departed, the wife didn't even know how to write a check. So how to be able to, you know, have that. And my sense is that that by and large, that it was an equal partnership. And that it wasn't just that you let her do all the socializing, but that you maybe followed her lead and you were also engaged and participated. And my sense is that that you have such a lovely, kind disposition that many people would be delighted to, you know, welcome you into their gathering, whatever that might be. So I don't know your circumstances in terms of what's available to you, where there are resources for, and then whether it's on the basis of being elderly or on the basis of a talent or an interest or a hobby that you may have had, that there are social gatherings. There's no dearth of them, even though these days we have to be a little bit more careful than before. But my sense is that it would be a little bit of a waste for you just to keep yourself to yourself, that you sound like that you're a very level-headed and, you know, emotionally rounded person, and that you do have something to offer. And certainly, if I saw you, I didn't know you, and you were maybe in your garden or at your front door or whatever, and you had the cat with you, then I would instantly stop, as I think many people would. So maybe allow your cat even to be an instrument to invite people to interact with you, and then see how that expands.
Oh, that's a really interesting. I met a friend over the weekend And she was telling me that her mother had got a puppy, and they'd been training this dog. And but it's so friendly that if you leave the door open, it will happily go off and go any length of distance and meet somebody and stay with them quite happily. And this has now happened 4 times. And she, as a consequence, has made friends at such a large distance, as far as 5 miles away. The dog's happily wandered off on its own. So I think that is quite a smart thing to do. Thank you.
Interesting. You would have to say that that dog has a real healthy sense of belonging
Yes, very much so.
wherever she is, whoever she's with, she's at home.
Yeah. Okay, so next question. I work from home due to COVID, so I don't see people as before. Sometimes it feels really strange, and at other times, I think I can be okay with it. I miss connecting with others as I did before. What do you think I need to work on to be more comfortable long term with working from home?
If that's what is the new normal, that working from home, I don't necessarily feel that that will be the case. And so, as we were kind of touching on earlier, that this new normal can either get me to go into a kind of a lockdown. Where it's, oh, it's so much easier. I don't have to deal with people. I don't have to put up with their whatever, fill in the blanks. And so that in other words, you control your environment totally and absolutely. And God forbid that anything should happen in your little space, because you may not be either A, equipped to deal with it, or you no longer have people that you can reach out and take support or help from. And so I think that that the COVID has also offered us an opportunity to see whether we have gone into lockdown or whether we have expanded ourselves in some kind of a way, either by again maybe taking up things like meditation or self-help. Not that I'm saying that's an answer to everything, self-help, but that we are exploring our own inner world. And this is something that is always going to serve you well. And so to know, like I've seen times when people who just before they started on a spiritual journey, that it was almost like as if something happened that they no longer had a work situation, or they maybe broke a leg or something, which meant that they had to be by themselves or not in the normal working situation. And it was as if that in itself afforded them a space for that inner exploration. And again, that inner exploration in isolation, if you like, has a time frame. It is not a forever thing. Because you will never know what you have achieved through the inner exploration if you're only ever in isolation. You ultimately have to come back into the world again and be with people and see if this inner work that you have done or explored is having an effect on relationships and interactions. And so for me, I would advocate, knowing that you can't exactly put it in your diary as to when it will all be over, but that, you know, what should people see at the end of all this from me? Not that I'm doing it for other people, but hopefully even a better version of myself, a calmer version, a more accepting, a more fluid or flexible me at the end of it. And so let it be a time when you can kind of do homework on your own self and observe, be the observer, let your own self be the project, that you're the project. And, you know, the laboratory is your mind, is your thinking. And you know, you've got space, that you're no longer with people who will always be inputting. That is no longer there. And so you get to get a sense of what your mind and your heart is like without the external input or opinions about everything. And you come to find that things that you had value for before, that they don't count anymore. They're not relevant. They're not important. And so it allows you to see what's really important for you. And don't worry, the time will come when you'll be back out again with old colleagues and fresh faces as well.
I've just come out of having my foot in a cast.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so, yes, I absolutely know that every time I find myself in a similar situation due to health, it's always a chance to discover something about myself and love myself more. And it's really nice because then when I'm with other people, they are far more patient with me.
Interesting.
It is very interesting. So
interesting.
I will back you on all of that completely. there's actually several questions, but this one's the next one.
What time do we finish, Alka? Alka, sorry, Arti.
You think 10 minutes more? Is that okay with you?
Okay. Okay.
Can you fit in 10 minutes more?
Yeah, I was thinking 3 o'clock, but that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me put this question to you and one other question, and then let's see. So this person has been on the dating scene since COVID. And yes, it seems unnatural to try and relate to people and date online through the Zoom screen. They're aware that they ask challenging and thought-provoking questions, sometimes philosophical, but the answers received don't sweep them off their feet. Are they being too hard on themselves?
Wait a minute. Back up there. This is a domain I'm not at all familiar with, Arti. can you just go over that again? I'm a bit long in the tooth, right? It wasn't around in my day, but go ahead.
So online dating.
Yes.
The online dating scene has left them feeling sad and dissatisfaction, and feelings of dissatisfaction and connection. Because you're connecting with people through the camera, on Zoom, it feels artificial. The conversation is questions, but the response to those questions don't excite them, I guess, or leave them feeling swept off their feet. So are they being too hard on themselves is the question.
Right. What I'm trying to understand here is that the person who is asking the question, are they saying that the people they're interacting with are asking these deep philosophical questions?
No. They are asking other people.
They're asking other people these deep philosophical questions, and they're not excited about the answers they're getting.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, it's uh, if dating is what you wish to do, then at the moment, that's your only alternative, isn't it? Unless and until the whole configuration and what is the norm in terms of interactions begin again, then you don't have an alternative, really. And it's not to say that even if you meet someone face to face, that they're going to have the kind of answers to your questions that will satisfy you. And so allow yourself to be surprised. I have to say, when I first encountered this organization, and I don't know if you know about the Brahmakumaris, but even though I had arrived at the knowing that I was looking for something spiritual, and you know, I'd been doing Hatha Yoga for a long time, but I wanted to know how to meditate. And somehow, again, being subject to conditioning, I just assumed that this spiritual wisdom would come from a man. And so I was rather surprised, not to mention quite amused and happy about the fact when I got to the door of the BKs, it was women who were greeting me. It was Daddy Janki and Sister Janti. And so I just never had thought, because it was never given to me. It was not something that was seen in terms of religion or spirituality or this kind of thing, that women would be the teachers. So why I'm sharing this with you is to allow yourself to be surprised, because it may come, you know, which is more important, the dating or the answers to those questions, you know, that it may not be the date who will give you the answers, but it could be your next door neighbor, you know, and will it be any less valid or powerful coming from a child, you know, rather than from an adult that you might be attracted to? And so that would be my question, which is more important, getting the answers to those questions or having a date?
Well, that should get them thinking. That's very interesting. I think you've answered this next question, but you may want to add something. Is it possible to feel you don't belong even in your 50s? As I keep thinking, I should have found my belonging by now.
Hmm. Wow. As I say, I can't depend on anyone else for my sense of belonging. As mentioned, you know, about the different periods in my life where there was the sense of belonging, but it wasn't that, you know, that I lost my love or appreciation or anything. So even in one's own life, that whether it's the big thing, and this for me is ultimately what it is, it's like about belonging to, whether we want to call it the universe or part of the plan that's unfolding, that I do have a part to play, and that whoever else is on the stage at the moment, that they too have something that they can contribute. But even in your day-to-day life, you know, that your day could be broken up into segments. Maybe there's a work situation, and because of your skills and your abilities, you feel belonging at work because you fit like the proverbial cog into that wheel that keeps the whole thing functioning and moving along. It could be maybe even in a social sense that, because wherever I belong, it's like, I liken it to that whoever that group of people is, it could be a group or it may just be one, but there is a tacit agreement that we're watching the same show. We've decided this is the movie we want to watch. In other words, that it jibes with our sense of self, with our sense of the world, our worldview of how things should be done. And even though, whether for those moments that I'm in that social setting, or it's the life that I've dedicated myself to, that and that there's agreement about the functioning and the values, etc. But even then, I'm myself. I'm an individual, and there's a tacit agreement that we subscribe to these principles or values, and that we're all supportive at some level just by our thoughts for each other. But even then, that I am still my own person, and at some point, whether through death or maybe even not waiting till death, that I may go in a different direction, you know, and I will be by myself. So it's like I need both things. I need to feel the really the feeling ultimately of belonging is to do with your own self. And you know, the bonus is if it gets reflected back to you by the universe and by other people. But even then, you know, that everything can change tomorrow. And so if I don't feel belonging in my own life, then I have to explore a little and see why not. And ultimately, it's not that anybody else is responsible for it. And it's not to say that bad things and rejections and all of those things may have happened in my life. But even then, that the belonging has to be able to absorb those and keep moving. And I'm always going to advocate, you know, don't be alone. Can I, Artie, is it okay if I promote the idea of people learning meditation?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And even though there's like a group of people, and one of the things that I love about this group of people, that sometimes we might dress in a similar fashion or whatever, but that each one is unique. And it is, even though we will say that we have the same maybe way of seeing the world or the other world or spirituality or reincarnation or principles or diet or whatever else, that it's not about making people photocopies of each other. It is with this ambience, this vibration, and this permission that is almost permissiveness, that it allows you to reveal yourself. It allows you to come out of yourself. You're already in there. And this, they're not going to push something into you. This is why I like the idea of the education that is given here. It's about uncovering. It's about inviting out rather than about pushing something in. And so I would simply suggest find yourself a meditation class and you will enjoy, you will begin to feel comfortable in that. It's not that you have to. The beautiful thing here is nobody has to sign up. And I know for myself that if when I encountered the BKs, if anybody said that I had to fill in a form, a membership form, or that I belong or make some commitment, then I would have been gone in a heartbeat. And so nobody ever imposes that on you. And it allows you to learn at your own speed. And the delight is in what is revealed to you by you, bits of you that you didn't even know were in there.
Which brings me to my last question. And I apologize to everybody else, but this really is the last question. The person's very appreciative, like many others, for your wisdom and your insights this evening. And the question is, which line or steps in meditation do you suggest one follows to work on feelings of taking back self-ownership, belonging as I am?
You know, I think with your question, you're three quarters of the way there. You are three quarters of the way there. And as I say, that there's an energy that is available to us now. And that one of the wonderful things in what I hear from you and in your question is an awareness that it's time to remove this, maybe a shell that I created around myself, thinking that it was protecting my heart from hurt or for some other reason, and that it is time to let go of it. And there's a beautiful image that comes in one of the songs that Lucinda Drayton sings. I think her name's changed now, I'm not sure. But the idea of the little flower making its way through the crack in the pavement, you know, which is solid cement, and yet that little flower emerges. And so I think that's the thing, and it may sound so simplistic, but even just this sound, I am. And not to be followed by anything. That's where I think it has to begin. You know, and you'll see when you say I, and say it slowly inside yourself, even look in a mirror as you're saying it, and say it even in words, I am. And there's an energy, it's almost like an invitation coming through all your senses, from your eyes, from your mouth, your ears, as you hear yourself say, I am. The Hindi word is Om, but in English, I am. And I promise you that you will already, as I am now, feeling that energy. And it's as if that which is or has been held in abeyance, almost asleep or suppressed or depressed, languishing there, waiting for a signal from you that the time has come, that you are ready. I am. And it begins to awaken. And just make sure you don't fill in any other words, like, you know, all the ways that you would have defined yourself before. I'm not this, I'm not that, I am unhappy, I am so-and-so's wife or husband. I am. And you will feel that energy almost just subtly, softly, gently pervading your whole physical being. That's, you ask for one step, that for me would be it.
Wow. I think that is enough to not just simply start the journey, but sustain our journey in meditation. So thank you. Thank you for your time and for giving us so much of it this evening at this end. I know we've eaten well into your day. So thank you very, very
much. Thank you for the opportunity. Always lovely to interact with you, Aarti.